On Tech News Today, a new low-cost humanoid robot is busting out of China. Plus, YouTube launches its long-awaited music app, and the new version of Android Wear lets you make calls without a phone. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, November 12th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by Braintree. Looking to set up payments for your business? Braintree gives your app or website a payment solution that accepts just about every payment method with one simple integration. Plus, Braintree will give you the first $50,000 in transactions fee-free. To learn more, visit BraintreePayments.com/TNT. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin. Co-anchor today is Fusion editor Kashmir Hill. How you doing, Kashmir?
I am good. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. You wrote a really interesting piece about the J.P. Morgan Chase hack. When this happened, it was the biggest hack, I think, or the scariest hack, maybe, that many of us had ever heard of. And we thought, oh, my gosh, they got access to the banks. They're going to be draining the accounts. They're going to be stealing all this information. They're going to be doing all these nefarious things. But as you pointed out in your piece, that is not the case, is it?
It is not the case. We also thought Russia was behind the hack. We kept pointing the finger at them and saying that this is probably some kind of new nation-state warfare. But actually, the guys behind this hack, according to the Department of Justice, basically just wanted to steal a list of email addresses so that they could spam those people with penny stock emails in order to manipulate the prices of penny stocks so they could make money off of the price fluctuations. So basically, they only hacked J.P. Morgan Chase because they knew that was a list of people who have money and are interested in finance.
And as you pointed out in your article, the same list could have probably been acquired by simply purchasing it from some you know, person who sells such lists pretty easily. It seems like a hard way to get a list of email addresses.
It does seem like a hard and illegal way to get email addresses. But it is amazing. I mean, according to the Department of Justice, they made millions of dollars off of doing the penny stock manipulation via email. So it tells you that that is how valuable a list of email addresses is, that you could make millions if you have the right list and then, you know, use it illegally.
And it tells you that crime does pay until the FBI catches you. Now, they all live in Israel, I think. Is there some sort of extradition? How is this going to happen from a prosecution perspective?
Yeah, I think that two people are in Israel, and one person, I believe, is actually in Moscow now.
Oh.
So there may be, as we know from Edward Snowden, it can be hard to get people out of Russia.
Yeah, all right. Well, that was a really unexpected result from that hack. Man, that is very strange. But again, lucrative. Sounds like they knew what they were doing from a making money perspective. They didn't know what they were doing from a not getting caught perspective. And, well, it happens. Jumping into our top story. The Wall Street Journal published a scoop last night saying that Apple is talking to the banks as part of its development of a peer-to-peer money transfer service comparable to Venmo. This paper speculated that the service could be a feature of Apple Pay, which would enable people to transfer money to other people in the same way that iPhone users now buy stuff in stores just using Apple Pay. And the report said that Apple is talking to J.P. Morgan Chase, speak of the devil, Capital One, Wells Fargo, and U.S. Bank Corp. This makes sense, Kashmir Hill, of course, because Apple wants all the money.
Yeah, everybody wants to see how we're spending. Certainly valuable information to be able to see what people are doing and have their credit card information stored away.
And of course, everybody's been predicting the elimination of the George wallet for, I don't know, 20 years, 30 years or whatever. And I'm down my wallet, the stuff that I have to carry because the phone isn't ready to completely replace my wallet. I'm down to a single credit card for those places that don't accept electronic payment, et cetera. And I have my driver's license because, the state of California doesn't support a driver's license app yet, but I'm waiting for those two things. And once those two things happen, once everybody accepts electronic payments, including individuals, including people at the farmer's market, whatever, and when California supports a driver's license, then that's it. The entire wallet has been completely absorbed by my phone. And I'm looking forward to that because I already have too much stuff that I have to carry around, especially a charger for my phone. We got some more news coming right up. But first, I want to talk about Braintree Payments. This is the way if you have an app or a website and you're selling things, you're offering your services online to accept money. It's great for you, the developer, because a few lines of code give you all the power and benefits of Braintree. But more importantly, I think it's great for your customers, your potential customers. One of the things that happens online these days is people go and they love what you're doing and they want to buy your products. They want to use your services and they go to pay for them. And then the whole process of paying becomes such a big hassle. It's either confusing or there are too many things to fill out. There's too many forms or it's too slow. The performance doesn't work very well or it doesn't accept the type of payment that you want to pay with or it doesn't accept your currency or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There are a million reasons why somebody will essentially fail to complete the purchase that they intended to complete when they started going down the sort of the shopping cart path. And that's the great thing about Braintree. They'll make sure that doesn't happen. They have something that I like to call invisible payments. Once you start to use a service with Braintree, and you've experienced this with Uber, the payments can be invisible. So Uber's a great example. You call your car up. Car shows up. You get in the car. You go. They take you to where you're going, and you get out. That's an invisible payment. You paid for it. They'll notify you of what the price was and so on, give you an opportunity to leave a tip, whatever. But the payment was invisible and seamless and easy. Even signing up initially is super, super easy. And that's the great thing about Braintree Payments. You know, if you look at Uber, Uber's a great example because this was a tiny startup that nobody heard of at some point when they started using Braintree. And Braintree's great for tiny startups. And then they grew and grew and grew. And now they're this massive global company worth over $50 billion. They're this super unicorn. And they still use Braintree Payments, of course, because that's what got them there. And Braintree can grow with your company as well. Braintree gives you a full-stack payment solution. They give you support for all payment types. And with a single integration across all platforms, you get superior fraud protection, great customer service, and really fast payouts. Best of all, it's great for your customers. Check it out for yourself. Visit BraintreePayments.com/TNT. All right, let's jump into our first interview story. The BlackBerry-centric site CrackBerry posted exclusive pictures of what is probably the company's next Android phone. The device is codenamed Vienna. CrackBerry editor-in-chief Chris Parsons joins us to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate being here.
I'm so glad you're here. Now, how reliable are these pictures? They look very legit. Are you pretty certain of their reliability?
I'm definitely confident in their reliability. The only thing that, you know, could possibly change over time is that they are early rendering. So, you know, the design and some final features could essentially go ahead and change as it moves into production. So,
what is impressing you about this new model?
Well, as most people know, BlackBerry has sort of moved away from their own operating system, the BlackBerry 10 OS, and they've moved into Android now. So this device will essentially bring a unique perspective to Android because of the fact that it comes with a keyboard. Granted, it's not the first device with a keyboard, a full physical QWERTY keyboard in the Android world, because BlackBerry has just recently released their Priv slider device, which brings in the full QWERTY keyboard into the Android world. But this particular device, you know, it has a really nice design to it. And a lot of people, since we put up the pictures, have been pretty receptive to that actual design over the Priv design, which was released as a slider. So it'll be interesting to see how this device pans out and, you know, whether or not it will be something that will be successful for BlackBerry in the long run.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, it looks pretty much like the Priv minus the slider. It's got the curved screen. It's got the keyboard, but it's in solid. Do you have any idea? I mean, you guys are great with building community around the BlackBerry products and so on. Are people not liking the slider? Why would they eliminate the slider feature?
Well, I mean, the slider is just one option. BlackBerry CEO John Chen made it well known when they started announcing that they were releasing Android devices. He made it well known that there were going to be a whole range of devices that would be available eventually. The slider is just one iteration. This is what we're seeing here with the Vienna is, just another option that will hopefully eventually be available for those who don't necessarily like the slider form factor. It's all about options, and BlackBerry has a whole range of devices that they have lined up. With the Priv, that was the first one. With the Vienna, that will ultimately be the second device. And I'm sure that they have some other device designs in the pipe as well. So, they're not trying to appeal to everybody. They're trying to appeal to a little bit of a niche keyboard fan, but they're still kicking it out with different styles. And hopefully we'll see more from them in the future.
BlackBerry has obviously been having some struggles in the smartphone market. Do you see them with this model just appealing to, the kind of long BlackBerry fans, or are they trying to, bring in a new group of users? Is there like a particular current smartphone user that they're going after with this model?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And for the long term BlackBerry user, having the keyboard is something that those users really appreciate, but Android users, that ecosystem hasn't necessarily had any devices that offer a full QWERTY keyboard. And, the full QWERTY keyboard isn't necessarily about being able to go ahead and type faster or anything like that. It's about convenience times. Like when you're sitting in the back of the cab, yeah, you could probably type a whole lot faster on a touchscreen. But, when you're sitting in the back of a cab, it's easier to essentially go ahead and type out those emails and text messages and BBMs and such on the full QWERTY keyboard. So I think with their Android offerings, they are most definitely reaching out to those who have been long-term BlackBerry fans, but they're also reaching out to a new audience that has never actually been introduced to any of the previous BlackBerry offerings through the QWERTY keyboard and such, because there hasn't been any sort of device offering in the Android world that actually presents that, at least no good quality ones for pretty much the past few years anyways.
Wonderful. Well, it was great to see those renders on your exclusive. Chris Parsons is at crackberry.com and on Twitter at Blaze, and Blaze is spelled BLA1ZE. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Mike, for having me.
Thank you for coming on. A home humanoid robot called the Alpha 2 is being crowdfunded on Indiegogo. Before we talk about this product, let's take a look at the company's video.
Good job, Joyce.
Alpha 2 is smarter than your smartphone.
Rise and shine.
And he makes a great tutor.
Alpha, what's the word for orange juice in Spanish?
Jugo de naranja.
The robot looks to be about foot and a half high. It's white mostly with orange trimmings, and it's got flashing colored lights. It seems to have the run of the house, walking around, interacting with people.
Oliver is due for his flea medication.
And look at the skeptical look the dog has. And the dog is like, come on. I could chew this thing up.
The dog's like, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, that's right.
I just had a cake and it only has 5 tiers.
And now it's just spazzing out.
Call All City Cakes and print a copy of that contract.
Okay, Joyce.
So they're basically showing how it's usable as an Amazon Echo that can walk around.
Okay. If you're going out, there's a 75% chance.
I like how the robot just has the run of the house.
Yeah.
Hand to handyman.
And it's handing people stuff. It just handed her an umbrella.
Use a small screwdriver to attach the adapter flange.
This kind of seems more like science fiction than something we're going to be able to buy in a couple of months.
Yeah. I mean, this is really, I think this video above all shows what we kind of want. We kind of want a little personality that can walk around and sort of think and talk. And here's where it's taking a picture through its camera, forehead camera, and identifying the people. It shows sort of Terminator vision where it zooms in on somebody's face and said, oh, this is so-and-so.
Alpha, download the Storyteller app.
downloading Storyteller app.
The only thing it doesn't do is crack jokes.
Yeah.
Alpha, what's a star?
A star is a sphere of plasma held together by its own gravity, appearing as a fixed luminous point in the sky.
It's also a babysitter, apparently.
Would you like to hear a bedtime story?
Yeah.
We'll read to your kids so you don't have to.
Good night to moms and dads.
All right. Well, it looks very cool. Looks maybe too cool. Evan Ackerman is a senior writer for IEEE Spectrum, and he wrote a really great story about this product and its Indiegogo campaign. Evan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike.
So glad you're here to help us understand what we're seeing in this video. Now, this robot is being made by a Chinese company called Ubtech Robotics. Do we know anything about the company? Is this a new company? What's the deal with this company?
We know a little bit. They have a slightly earlier version of a humanoid robot called Alpha. The one on the Kickstarter is Alpha 2. So they have some experience with hardware for sure. We're not quite as sure what their software experience is, though, and that's most of what Alpha 2 is really selling.
How much of what we just saw in the video do you think actually works?
That's a really difficult question to answer. There is a lot going on in the video that I'm not really convinced is something that's realistically going to work in your home. I think that the robot can walk around. I think that it can talk to you. I think that it can listen to you. And I think there's certainly some interaction there. But there's a lot of stuff like that's a little bit deceptive. Like when the robot hands the girl an umbrella, there's no way that it could have picked that umbrella up by itself. And when it hands the guy a screwdriver, you know, maybe if you put the screwdriver in its hand first, then you could ask it to hand it to you and it would hand it to you. But like, it's not picking these things up by itself. And I also have, I'm not entirely convinced that the speech that you're hearing the robot give, like its voice, I'm kind of thinking that that's pre-recorded and not synthesized speech. And some social robots use a lot of pre-recorded speech, but kind of the suggestion in the video is that the robot is coming up with this stuff dynamically, and I'm not really convinced that that's what's going on.
Some other complaints about what we saw in the video. I think that the multicolored flashing eyes and flashing lights are really garish and kind of tasteless and aren't really what you want in a humanoid robot. There are lots of things in there that suggest that, you know, it's really two components. One is a speaker that connects presumably through a smartphone to the internet, so you could do things like, you know, check my schedule, download apps, you know, teach me yoga, that kind of thing. You could see how that would work. And the other part of it is locomotion, where this thing moves around and points to the stars and does all these kinds of things. And it seems unlikely that this sort of thing is going to work. However, I do believe that there is a potential market for this kind of robot. I remember years ago, Sony had the Sony Aibo robot dog, super popular in Japan, kind of popular among geeks in the U.S., and they, in my opinion, shouldn't have discontinued it, because they should have kept developing it, because Sony has lost its reputation for doing really cool things, and that was a really cool thing that Sony had an exclusive on. Do you see other companies coming along, assuming that this company is not going to give us the robot we want or the robot we deserve? Do you think other companies are going to come along and give us a really cool, functional humanoid robot that does stuff that kind of thrill us, that we can engage with conversationally? Is anybody working on something like that, do you think?
People are working on social robots. There's a Jibo, which you've probably heard of. That's a non-mobile social robot that's being worked on by a professor who's been studying social robotics at MIT for decades. There's also Aldebaran Robotics, and in partnership with SoftBank, have a robot called Pepper, which is a kind of humanoid-ish robot with a face and arms and hands that will interact with you socially and dynamically. Both of those companies have a lot of experience with robotics, and there is certainly a desire for robots like these, but getting robots that can convincingly interact with humans in a way that's not creepy is very, very difficult. So this is the thing that we want, but it's going to take a lot of work for us to get there. And in the short term, you know, it's sort of like Siri on your iPhone. Right. It kind of works some of the time. And, you know, when it does, you can almost convince yourself that there's like an artificial intelligence in there somewhere, but a lot of the time it just doesn't get things quite right. And that's really what the state of social robotics is right now.
Evan, when do you think you're going to actually be able to meet this robot and try it out and see how close it is to how it's portrayed in the video?
Well, I'm hoping that it'll be in the next month or two, but it really depends on where the company is internally, because Indiegogo is selling people on what this company thinks that they can eventually produce. Now, they say that they're going to be shipping in February of next year, I think, which is really, really quick. And so, you know, with CES coming up, if they wait more than, you know, even just like 3 or 4 weeks to show people what this robot can really do, not in a promotional video, then, you know, we're going to start worrying about whether they'll be able to deliver on what they've promised.
One of the interesting things about the year 2015 is it's a year when there are a lot of companies who are essentially either open sourcing or making available to the public via APIs, artificial intelligence of all kinds of, you know, all kinds of different types of artificial intelligence. And it seems to me that the way to go on a home robot is to make sure that the hardware, the locomotion, the physical capabilities of the robot are amazing, to make sure that it has lots of processing power, which is going to make it not inexpensive, and then to have it constantly be getting its intelligence not from the computer inside of itself, but on, you know, in the cloud, basically. And what I've noticed with the Amazon Echo, which I absolutely love because it's a physical object in the home rather than an app or something running on a phone, is that it's constantly being improved. And, you know, the pace at which the Amazon Echo gets better and smarter and more capable is really incredible. And they don't make a big deal out of it. It just simply gets better. The hardware, because of the Amazon Echo's limited feature set, it's essentially a microphone and speaker with an antenna, some electronics connected to the cloud, it never needs to be upgraded. I imagine it'll be just as good in terms of the hardware in 10 years as it is now. But meanwhile, in 10 years, the cloud-based artificial intelligence should be able to split the atom or something. And so that's the kind of robot. I think that's the sweet spot for a robot. And I think that some, like, for example, Pepper, that is a cloud-based intelligence, isn't it? Isn't that how it works?
Yeah, and it's the tricky thing is that you really need to have like a critical mass of both hardware and software and people who want to take advantage of both in order to like focus the resources you need to make cloud-based robotics or cloud-based anything practical. So companies like Apple and Amazon, where, you know, they can sell tens or hundreds of thousands of these things, then you can sustain that. But for a small robotics company, it's a lot more difficult to really get that infrastructure up and running. And it's apps have had the same problem, right? Like you buy things like a phone based on what apps it has, but nobody's going to develop apps unless a bunch of people have bought the phones already. So in some sense, it may need some really big company to say, okay, this is what we want to do. We want to do social robotics and we want to do it.
And Skype just died again.
One thing that really struck me, Mike, when we were watching that video where you have this, what appears to be like an intelligent robot that is observing what is going on and reacting to people. One of the things that Evan mentioned in his write-up is that the robot is intended for security, home monitoring purposes. So then I just think about this robot that is moving through your home, that is looking for crime to happen. and I'm very curious how that will fall out in the end, whether a robot that sees something illegal happen in your home will be expected to report that to authorities. Even if it's not an intruder, it's like you doing something illegal in your own home.
Or maybe firing darts at the intruder. Something like that would be awesome. Or flamethrower or something like that. That would be great. No, it wouldn't. That would not be great. All right. Well, we apologize for the Skype issues. We're going to say goodbye to Evan. Evan Ackerman is at spectrum.ieee.org. And you can follow him on Twitter at botjunkie. And he is definitely a bot junkie. And we thank you for joining us. Well, I'm really excited about this one, folks. The Bluetooth standard is getting a massive upgrade next year to support the Internet of Things and other miscellaneous technology revolutions. The new spec will increase the range of BLE, that's Bluetooth light. What do they call it?
Low energy.
That's right. BLE, Bluetooth low energy. And it'll increase the speed by up to four times. I've got Padre in there. You should always stand there and sort of, it's very helpful. It'll increase the range by up to four times and the speed by up to 100%, according to the Bluetooth special interest group. Best of all, and here's the part I like best, the next Bluetooth will get mesh networking capability, enabling Bluetooth devices to relay data traffic. So theoretically, if you've got something way out on the far side of the lawn, a device can connect to your router or your phone or whatever, and then that can connect to another device, and then that can connect to your sprinkler system, and that can connect to that lighting system you have on the far side of the yard. Very cool. Mesh networking coming to Bluetooth. Very, very cool. And it's worth pointing out that the whole wearable computing revolution became possible because of Bluetooth low energy. It was a change in the Bluetooth spec that made it all of it possible. So super excited.
So I am really curious about the security of it. One of my hacker refers to Bluetooth low energy as Bluetooth low security. The part of the low energy is basically getting not having encryption over the connection. So I'm curious about that aspect of this.
Yeah, BLS, and that's especially important now with this going to have such an extended range and mesh networking. I mean, now instead of the Bluetooth possibly getting into your neighbor's house, it could get into the other neighbor's house. You know, you could relay connections down the neighborhood, theoretically, I guess. So, yeah, that's a great point. And I imagine you have all kinds of other issues if you did do good encryption regarding, you know, power management and all that stuff. But I really don't know enough about it to say one way or the other. We'll have to see what happens when it comes out. But as we found with, you know, there have been a rash of stories in the last 2 years about, oh, you can hack this skateboard. You can hack this, like, you know, garden thermometer. You can hack everything. Yeah, you can hack it because nobody built security in any of that stuff. You can hack everything. And so I think we're going to have another round of you can hack anything stories coming when this the new spec hits. Well, in product update news, Google today finally released their long-awaited YouTube music app for iOS and Android. The app functioned like a Pandora-like music streaming app, but extracts the music from YouTube videos. The ad-free version requires a $9.99 per month YouTube Red subscription, but you can try YouTube Music free for 14 days. Non-subscribers can still use the non-premium service, which will show ads. So I'm looking forward to trying this, Kashmir Hill, but there are so many options now for music. What I'm curious about here is how they really, you know, where have the rights been established for the using this as a music streaming service? I mean, the Taylor Swifts of the world are pretty sensitive about this kind of stuff. And if they're, you know, I need to know more about it. And now that it exists, I'm going to check it out and see if they've really got the rights to all the music that they're providing.
Yeah, I know when YouTube Red came out, it was so controversial because YouTube kind of sent out a blanket rights agreement to lots of some people. I know ESPN, for example, took off a lot of videos that they had there because they just couldn't sign the agreement that YouTube or Google wanted them to. I'm curious what'll be in there and what won't be.
Yeah,
it doesn't look like Taylor Swift has written a letter to Google about it yet.
Well, it just hit this morning. It's still early in the day, so we'll see.
Yes.
We'll see if she writes a letter. Well, in other product update news, Android Wear now supports cellular access. That means watchmakers can add cellular modems and SIM cards to their smartwatches, enabling both phone calls and access to internet data without a phone. The first watch to support the new feature is the LG Watch Urbane Second Edition LTE. Let's check out LG's promotional video to see how the watch is supposed to work.
Did you leave your phone on purpose?
Yeah, I didn't want to bother.
Guy's in the back of a taxi, and he's got a giant watch on his wrist. This should increase the size a little bit. And now he's walking around. And he's in some sort of locker room. I don't know where this is going.
Shot.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, now everybody in the world is now talking on the phone to their watch. Now he's talking to a woman who's got a watch, and she's doing ballet on the streets of London or wherever that is. And everybody's got one. And so, yeah, there you go. So in this case, they're showing a guy running track at night. And this is an obvious use case because you want data, you want to interact with cloud-based apps, you want to be able to receive phone calls, but if you're running on a track, you don't want to be carrying an iPhone 6S, well, not an iPhone, but a giant Android phone. And now the ballet person is doing ballet with a giant. She's going to topple over to the left because she's wearing that watch on her left hand.
This is not a particularly fashionable watch. Smartwatches are not fashionable.
Yeah. All right. Now somebody's rock climbing.
Oh, rock climbing.
And so while you're rock climbing, you can receive calls. So, Mom, not now. I'm rock climbing.
Right. I mean, hands-free phone calls definitely make sense. I can totally see the appeal. But I do love that every single smartwatch, like this is the use case. Basically, they show people running wearing the watch, and like that is how you sell it.
Yeah.
It's another fitness device.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I think the way that it should work, there shouldn't be an actual regular phone connection. It should all be an app. It should be all be voice over IP type of phone connections, because that way you can eliminate some of the electronics and so on. So. Oh, well, what are you going to do? Well, we got some more news coming right up, but I want to talk about ZipRecruiter, one of our sponsors today. ZipRecruiter is the one and only great way to hire people these days. The problem with hiring people is that they're everywhere, of course. You never know where you're going to find the best and most qualified people. And ZipRecruiter lets you post to 100-plus job sites with a single click, and that includes the social networks. So powerful. And the part that I like best, they've been working night and day to build up all the things, to eliminate all the pain points in hiring people and even managing people. Now they've got a whole bunch of human resources type of documentation and stuff that's automated, so that when you hire, and there are multiple processes. First, you need to get your job out there, so they make that instantaneous. And then when the job candidates start rolling in within 24 hours, they help you tell at a glance who are the most qualified, who are the least qualified, who are the unqualified. So you're not wasting your time on people you're never going to hire anyway. And you can focus and spend your valuable time on the people who are going to make a great hire for you. And then bringing them on board with your I-9s and your W-4s and all that kind of stuff. That stuff is all automated. Background checks are automated. Real-time process tracking, all of that stuff, it makes the whole onboarding process super, super easy. And that's exactly what you want when you're hiring people, because, again, as a lot of people point out, you're already short-staffed. That's why you're hiring people. So this is a great way to save a lot of time. We have a user testimonial from a happy ZipRecruiter client named Scott, who said the recruiting process used to be so painful. Before, I posted several places, get a million resumes, but only a few responses from qualified candidates. It was torture. But with ZipRecruiter, we post once and get qualified candidates in one easy-to-review place. We've hired some of our best employees using ZipRecruiter. And you can try ZipRecruiter today for free. You can even do that first hire for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Trenton Moody, who posted this picture on Twitter. He says he's listening to the Tech News Today before he gets his study on with IT Pro TV, another advertiser, not on this show, but on other Twit shows. And he is in the library. And as my librarian sister would point out, the library is a great place to watch tech podcasts. Very cool. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. And use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Cashmere Hill, I know you're going on vacation, but what are you working on in the meantime?
I'm just going to be working on my tan, Mike.
All right. So you can look for Cashmere's tan on Twitter, at Cash Hill on Twitter. And Cashmere, I want to thank you and have a great time on your vacation. Have a great tan, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mike. See you next time.
Take care. Bye-bye. Let us know what's on your mind. Send us email to tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW. That's 260-868-7469. You can subscribe to Tech News Today on Apple TV by downloading one of the Twit apps, or you can choose another way to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. You can also watch us live every weekday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1700 UTC at twit.tv/live. And you can follow us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike Elgin. And don't miss our other new show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. And that is the Tech News Today. The show is produced by Jason Kleanthis and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.